and welcome to Mr. Jeffrion's World History Podcast, Episode 1. I'm Mr. Jeffrion. Today, we are going to discuss topics and themes that actually take place before history, from early human evolution to the Paleolithic era to the role of agriculture as an agent of change. This week, my students began reading Chapter 1 of Traditions and Encounters by Jerry Bentley and Herbert Ziegler. It is a commonly used textbook in AP World History courses, but that is not to say you have to have read or currently be reading that book to get something out of this podcast. But if you are one of my students, you better read. The podcast and the other supplemental materials found on MrJeffrion.com are just that, supplemental. They are not a replacement to reading. Listening to this podcast and not reading is like taking a multivitamin and not eating. That will not make you healthy. Now, eating healthy foods and taking your vitamins seems to be a sound idea in regards to health, just as reading your textbook, listening to the podcast, and using some of the supplemental materials is a sound idea in regards to learning, and is more likely to result into success on quizzes, tests, and essays, and later on the AP World History exam. So, if you are an AP World History student, don't just listen to the podcast and think you've done your history for the week. Read your book. Before we get started, let's take a moment to talk about what history is. Let's attempt to define it. Some have said there is no history, only histories. Others have called it a set of lies agreed upon. Others still say it is written only from the point of view of the victors. I wouldn't disagree with any of this, but I believe history is what we make it. It is a collection of experiences reflecting the human condition. It isn't all-inclusive. It can't be. The point of views we have available to us are only from those who left their mark. And when I say left their mark, I can mean that quite literally. There are rooms in caves in France and Spain that show nothing but a man's handprint repeated hundreds of times, as if to make the declaration, "I am here." Isn't that really an allegory for what we are all doing? History is fluid. It is happening. We don't just look back at history. We move through history. We study the experiences of others to inform our actions and place our own experiences in context so that we may find our place in the human story. Think about that. If you are a student of mine and you are doing the reading, one of the first things you were struck by was a topic that can be seen as controversial, but there's no getting around it: evolution. I really see this as an opportunity to introduce a concept that is essential to every world history course, the idea of keeping an open mind. In world history, just because of the nature of the course, it should be expected that we will come across a variety of beliefs and ideas, some of which may challenge our worldview. In the end, this can only be a good thing. Either your worldview evolves, or your beliefs become stronger because they have survived being challenged. Frankly, as far as evolution goes, it isn't essential that one believes in it to do well in history. History makes sense with or without evolution. This isn't biology. That said, this isn't a topic we need to spend a lot of time on. If it interests you, then I recommend exploring the arguments of paleoanthropologists and their critics. Moving on. Early human prehistory is typically divided into two eras, Paleolithic and the Neolithic era. Each of these eras has its own unique features, and every world history student should know the basics of each. First up, the Paleolithic era, or Old Stone Age. This is when hominids first start doing things we consider human. They master fire, invent tools and language, and this is when Homo sapiens sapiens really make their mark. This all begins in Africa. From there, humans crossed into the Middle East, Europe, Asia, and the Americas. Before I go any further, I'd like to introduce you to SPICE. This is an acronym that summarizes the five themes of AP World History. I think it can be helpful in identifying important information in any world history textbook, whether you are an AP World History student or not, and it's how I plan on exploring many of the topics in our podcast. SPICE stands for S, Social Interactions; P, Political Situations; I, Interactions Between Humans and the Environment; C, Cultural Events; and E, Economic Themes. I'm not necessarily going to talk about each of these in the order of the acronym, and I'm not necessarily going to point it out when one item I'm discussing relates to a particular letter in the SPICE acronym, because it doesn't always make sense to do that conversationally. But you can go to MrJeffreyOn.com, click on the Study Aids tab, select note-taking methods, and find a SPICE chart I found online somewhere. I'm not really sure who the original author is. I wish I did. I could give them credit. But you can fill out that chart while you're listening to the podcast or while you're reading your textbook just to organize your notes. Social interactions during the Paleolithic era were unique in human history in that Paleolithic societies seem to have been small in number, around 25 or so people, and egalitarian both in terms of gender equality and social equality. This is primarily due to the economic system of the day. We're talking about hunter-gatherer societies. Hunting, of course, requires tools from long spears with sharp stone points that could be thrust into an animal to smaller stone cutting tools used for cleaning and skinning the kill, and later more flexible spears or even atlatls that could hurl a projectile into an animal were developed. I actually had the opportunity to use an atlatl. It's a handle that flings a spear that looks like a long arrow. It's pretty awesome, and I highly recommend it. Of course, get your parents' permission to do this somewhere safe and under the supervision of someone who knows what they're doing, but definitely check that out if the opportunity ever arises. So in the Paleolithic age, we still have tools. We still have technology. But everyone's job is to get food, meaning no one person's job is any more important than anyone else's. Now, typically, modern historians do assign gender roles here. Men are seen as the hunters, they're hunting for the animals, and women are foraging for fruits, vegetables, and wild tubers. But that doesn't mean that one is seen as better than the other. No doubt there were some days or weeks when the hunt wasn't as successful and women were the sole providers of sustenance. In fact, there is some evidence to suggest that women may have been held in a very high regard in Paleolithic societies. In terms of cultural events, specifically the beginning of what we might call religion, we have artifacts such as Venus figurines, which may have been fertility goddesses. You can Google these and find pictures of them, and they obviously seem like fertility goddesses if you see them. So the focus of early humans seems to be on continuing to reproduce humans so that we don't die out. But also critical to keeping from dying out is finding food. Kind of along the same theme of early religion, many cave paintings of animals and those depicting successful hunts are believed by some anthropologists to be a form of sympathetic magic. Like by drawing the animal, if they are ensuring a successful hunt. Of course, some paintings, like the handprint from earlier, were probably just for aesthetic purposes. And by aesthetic, I mean they were made for looks. All right, on to the Neolithic era, or New Stone Age. The first and most significant difference between the Neolithic and the Paleolithic era is the primary economic activity. This is when humans begin farming. This is known as the agricultural shift, the agricultural transition, or the Neolithic Revolution, and most likely this first occurred in the Middle East. Because of agriculture, humans were able to stay in one spot and have a surplus of food. As food increases, population also increases, and as farming doesn't require everyone to be farmers, job specialization occurs. The earliest jobs to emerge would be pottery making. They needed somewhere to store all that extra grain, and terracotta pots are sort of the forerunners of Tupperware. Also, textile development, which is to say, making fabric and clothing. Once people are able to stay in one place, they form villages like Katel Hayuk in modern-day Turkey or Jericho in Palestine. It's Neolithic peoples who developed metallurgy, that is, working with metal. First, they worked with copper, later on with bronze, which in addition to adding another job a person could do, metallurgist, it also improved farming implements, which further increased food production and further increased the population. This specialization led to social classes and even traditional gender roles where men went to work and women managed the household. This decrease in stature for women is directly tied to the agricultural shift, as societies became more and more patriarchal since the moment the first seed was planted in the soil. Patriarchal, of course, means men are in charge. As society became more complex, it became necessary to create governments, and early religions developed. Most of these were based on the sun or rain, the elements needed for agriculture. And as land is the most important commodity in an agricultural society, some groups would find it necessary to take land from others, and war is born. Other negative results from this transition would be an increase in diseases, both of lifestyle, because while food is more plentiful in agricultural society, it isn't quite as nutritious as food consumed by hunter-gatherers. And also communicable diseases spread quickly due to increased population density as villages grew into cities. We focus a lot on the agricultural societies because that's what eventually leads to the early river valley civilizations like Mesopotamia, Egypt, China, and the Indus. But not every Neolithic society grew their food. Some would take up herding. These nomadic societies are called pastoralists and would arise in areas that were not suitable for farming and would move from one place to another to find places for their herds to graze. So you would think, since they're raising animals, that they would eat mostly meat, but that actually would have been wasteful because you can only eat a goat once. Milk from goats and sheep would prove to be a more steady food source. Also, these societies most certainly interacted with the agrarian societies. No doubt, some of the interactions were negative and violent. But as nomadic people don't actually produce much of anything, they tend to be pretty reliant on trade with agricultural societies. And this is something we'll see much later on when we look at the Mongols. One of the most important questions we, as historians, need to ask in world history might be, what is a civilization? How do we define it? Incidentally, Bentley and Ziegler used the term complex society rather than civilization, and I think that's for a good reason. There's an old Taoist saying that says by calling something beautiful, we create ugliness. Along those lines, by calling something a civilization, or by establishing parameters for what constitutes a civilization, we are calling those who do not meet those parameters uncivilized. However, most world history textbooks use some variation of the following eight features to define a civilization. 1. Civilizations have cities. 2. Civilizations have some sort of economic specialization. 3. Civilizations have social classes. 4. Civilizations have art and architecture. 5. Civilizations have complex governments. 6. Civilizations have complex religions. 7. Civilizations have writing. And 8. Civilizations have a geographic location. There are societies that exist today that don't have all eight of these features. Do we consider them uncivilized? What are the ramifications of declaring an entire group of people uncivilized? Is there a danger in that? These, of course, are rhetorical questions, but they are questions worth thinking about. Now, we can all argue, based on our own specific definitions of civilizations and what that means, or even we can argue about the problems created by establishing a definition in the first place. But we generally all know what we are talking about when we say the word civilization. Nevertheless, we need to appreciate the complexity of the question and realize that not every aspect of civilization is considered a positive thing by all people. Certainly, there are benefits to civilization, and I'm going to take the stand that the benefits far outweigh the negative consequences. And I'm certain you would agree that you would much rather be uploading funny pictures to Instagram from your phone than foraging for something edible out in a forest somewhere. However, let's also recognize that by dividing society into different social classes and establishing a hierarchy where one class or gender is seen as superior results in a majority of the population under the control of an elite few. Certainly, civilization has brought remarkable advancement, but there is always a price to pay. Appreciate the complexity. Until next time, I'm Mr. Jeffreon, and this has been Mr. Jeffreon's World History Podcast.